You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates. You're watching The Inside Slant on The Sports Objective. Over the next hour, the guys will be joined by play-by-play voices, beat writers, and other analysts from around the nation as they preview this weekend's college football action. Let's hear from you throughout the show via Facebook Live, on our YouTube channel, or on Twitter at TheSportsOBJ. Now, here are the guys.
All right, welcome into The Inside Slant right here on The Sports Objective. With us right now, of course, our great producer. He does everything. He's the Oz of our TSO network, if you will, and that would be Bubba Rosenbaum. How are you, man?
Doing well, Dave. I'm excited to talk some college football as always. And last week we had about 15 games, and that was a nice appetizer, if you will. But this week you already have some tremendous games here on a Thursday night. I know we'll talk about those here in just a few minutes.
No doubt about it. In fact, we've got a few great guests. In fact, first up, I know Georgia's got a big game coming up this weekend, and actually on Saturday, right, Bubba?
Yeah, no doubt. In the top 20 matchup, and when you look at this matchup, obviously what jumps out is the new Oregon head coach was the defensive coordinator for the Dogs a season ago, and right now to preview that matchup, we'd love to welcome in, back from Dogs HQ, Palmer Toms. Palmer, we appreciate your time this evening.
Yeah, of course, guys. Had to step away halftime of the West Virginia Pitt game, watching former Georgia quarterback JT Daniels light it up a little bit. Always excited to watch those former guys get their opportunity, seeing him get a chance to make it work there at West Virginia.
No doubt about it. The backyard brawl, they're a great rivalry. And Palmer, that's what college football is all about. Or, you could even have high school football, a lot of great matchups in high school with great rivalries, whether it be inter-city rivalries or inter-county rivalries, a lot of great rivalries there at whatever level. But certainly when it comes to West Virginia Pitt, great to see that game back and being a great game to kick off officially, I guess, the college football season on a Thursday night.
And you've got the quarterback rivalry here, too, with JT Daniels and Keaton Slovis, both former USC quarterbacks. Daniels having started in 2018 and the start of the 2019 season before tearing his ACL. Slovis takes over. Daniels transfers out. Ultimately, they both transfer out, and now they've landed here in Morgantown and Pitt.
Yeah, pretty interesting on that note. And you obviously had, the Pitt wide receiver, Biletnikoff Award candidates going to USC, which that was pretty ironic. But, taking a look at this matchup, I mentioned, one of the reasons, that this is very intriguing. And that is because of, head coach Dan Lanning with the Oregon Ducks and Oregon's head coach coming over from the Dogs. So, what is your take on this matchup between the Ducks and Dogs?
Yeah, we've heard from both Kirby Smart and Dan Lanning. Obviously, haven't made the trip out to Eugene. Maybe would have liked to have done that with a couple family members out there. But, interesting to hear from both of them. And both of them have kind of had the same message that, Kirby Smart's not going to take any snaps in this game. Dan Lanning's not going to take any snaps in this game. They're both going to be on opposite sidelines, and obviously they'll get a ton of camera time, TV time there and attention in the buildup to this game. But ultimately it's the way that they prepare their players to play this game that'll decide it, not any sort of advantage that either side has with some knowledge. Lanning having coached all and recruited majority of this Georgia defense, having gone against the Georgia offense every day. Kirby Smart obviously knowing a little bit about Lanning's style. Todd Monken, Georgia offensive coordinator, having gone against a Lanning defense every day. So certainly going to be interesting. I think there's a lot of storylines there. But as Lanning said, that's all they are, stories.
Now, taking a look at the Ducks offensively, you know, tell our viewers, you know, what is Coach Lanning planning to do on the offensive side of the ball? Because, of course, Georgia is always so stout defensively.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see what Oregon does on the offensive side of the football. First, new offensive coordinator there with Kenny Dillingham, who had been at Florida State, had been at Auburn previously, and it's reuniting him with Oregon's transfer quarterback, Bo Nix, coming from Auburn. So, obviously, Georgia very familiar with what Nix brings to the table, his mobility. I think that Lanning has not named a starting quarterback yet. Everyone is expecting it to be Bo Nix. So excited to see what he can do with some different weapons around him. Ducks have a really stout offensive line, strong group up front, veteran group, with all five guys having started, 10, 15 games at least. They bring back four of their starters from last year, but that fifth starter that they lost and the one that's going to be replacing him, well, he was injured last year. And so he had been a starter. So all five of those guys up front have starting experience under their belt. Georgia certainly facing a strong offensive line. Nix should have time in the pocket, unless that is that Georgia's defense can separate, create some havoc up there. And, Nix working with some new weapons around him, new faces for Oregon fans, new faces for him, obviously, as a transfer, a lot of guys to replace at running back, a lot of guys to replace at receiver. And interestingly enough, you've got Oregon's former receiver coach, Brian McClendon, now back at Georgia, his alma mater.
Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, Palmer, as far as this game, a huge game for both teams, and certainly with Georgia, with the national championship. I'm just curious. We know how great the town is with Georgia. We know how big of a game this is. As far as they are having to tell these guys, even keel when it comes to their emotions, but you can have a new season, the opening season is one thing, but you just won a national championship. You've got a ton of talent, great coaching, great facilities, great everything when it comes to the Dogs. How are they going to be able to, in other words, not listen to all the hype when we know they're good, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think with that national championship now under their belt, it's kind of the final thing that Kirby Smart had been looking for at Georgia. He had recruited well. He had built up the facilities at Georgia. Obviously great opportunity to do so well at Georgia. He had just not capitalized on it quite yet. Now he's able to do that, has that championship trophy, a little bit of bling bling to show off. And he's certainly done that this offseason. I think that, Georgia fans, it was 41 years in the making. They wanted to celebrate it. He understands that, having been a Georgia player, having grown up a Georgia fan, a Georgia native, he understood how important this was for the state of Georgia. But at the same time, he's been around successful teams before. He understands how to put that behind him and, turn the page to the next season. He talked about that this week, that he was asked, has Georgia arrived? What will it take for you to say that, Georgia has arrived? And he said, I'll never do that. You've never arrived in this day and age of college football, because you're always working towards your next one. He certainly learned that from Nick Saban, saw the way that teams in Tuscaloosa, celebrated a championship, but then put it behind them and got right back to work. And, Kirby Smart, wants zero complacency on this team. He said at SEC Media Days, the group that won it, the group that did the, bulk of the work to bring that title home, they're off in NFL training camps now. They're preparing for season openers in the NFL. The guys that are going to be playing suiting up for Georgia this season, some of them contributed to that, but maybe they weren't the biggest contributors. There's certainly a couple of exceptions, but I do think that for the most part, this is still a hungry group. It's an inexperienced group. It's a hungry group that's ready to try and go become the first team since Alabama 2011, 2012 to go back to back.
Now, Palmer, in addition to Coach Lanning, obviously moving on to Eugene, you had Matt Luke back in March, the offensive line coach for the Dogs, resign. So, you know, talk about that change, you know, how that has gone over with some new blood there on the offensive line. And then also just any other staff changes to speak of?
Yeah, there were four assistants that left Athens this this spring. Four new guys that Georgia's going to be working with. Obviously, Lanning was the outside linebackers coach and defensive coordinator. He has been replaced by Chidera Uzodiribe, who has previously been at TCU and SMU. Was at SMU, was hired at TCU as Sonny Dykes made the transition over there just across town. And you know, he makes the move from that Dallas-Fort Worth area to Athens. Certainly, you know, early reviews have certainly been positive there. You know, again, I mentioned Brian McClendon coming to Athens as the receivers coach. He replaces Cortez Hankton, who's back in his hometown, his neck of the woods at LSU. And then, you know, one more on each side of the ball. Like you said, Matt Luke, former Ole Miss head coach, you know, Georgia offensive line coach, had big shoes to fill at Georgia with Sam Pittman. He did that pretty well, and he's off stepping away from football for a little bit, wants to spend some time with his family. So they go out and replace him with Stacy Searles, who had most recently been at North Carolina, but had previously been at Georgia under Mark Richt, you know, certainly familiar with the program, familiar with the expectations there. And then on the defensive side of the football, again, Jamile Adai, defensive backs coach, you know, had transitioned away from that role. You know, he went down to Miami, and Georgia brings in a really talented young guy in Fran Brown from Rutgers, had spent a lot of time up there and at Temple up in that Northeast area. He comes down to the Southeast now. And for as much of a culture shock as it may be, he's certainly gotten accustomed to the expectations and, you know, has gotten to work here at Georgia recruiting. You know, mentioned that Uzodiribe takes over the outside linebackers role. He is not going to take over the defensive coordinator position. That'll be split between inside linebackers coach Glenn Schumann and another defensive backs coach. They're splitting the DBs up into safeties and stars and corners. Will Muschamp working with the safeties and stars. He is also going to share that co-defensive coordinator role with Glenn Schumann.
Palmer, talk about the quarterback position for Georgia. Obviously, you have Stetson Bennett returning. You know, I think obviously a lot of people do give him credit, but I you know, on one hand, I still don't think he's necessarily at times getting the credit that he deserves. On you know, tremendous quarterback and. But talk about what Georgia has behind him.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll start with Stetson because, you know, I think that he's an incredibly talented guy, you know, often gets overlooked, like you said, you know, because of his history, because of his background. You know, a lot of people look at him and still see him as that 2017 walk-on, the 2019 kid, you know, the 2018 kid that went to JUCO, the 2019 backup to Jake Fromm, 2020 guy that was overwhelmed a little bit by the situation. But I think along the way, we've seen Stetson grow. And my expectation is for him to grow even more as he's, you know, now in his in a third year in this offense, surrounded by weapons, you know, offensively, and also just comfortable. I mean, he is comfortable with his role, comfortable in how confident the coaches are in him. But I also think he's comfortable now that he doesn't have to look over his shoulder. He is quarterback one. He's gotten the reps that he, you know, deserves. You know, this is the first time that he's gone into a season as QB1 getting those starter reps. You know, that wasn't the case in 2020 or 2021 when he started the bulk of those games, you know, was getting backup reps or worse in both those seasons. So, you know, it was interesting to hear from him this week. He said, you know, hey, you know, folks, you know, doubted me last year. And, you know, I was essentially said, you know, hey, you know, I was able to be Superman when everybody was doubting me. But now you got to wonder, you know, can folks are going to wonder, can you be Superman when everyone believes in you? when he said, you know, to say that there's not any doubters out there, well, that's probably not true, because there certainly still are some. But it's going to be interesting to see, you know, it's a different kind of doubt that's surrounding Stetson. But behind him, you've got Carson Beck, Brock Vandegrift, Gunnar Stockton, three very talented quarterbacks coming out of high school. All three of them, you know, high four stars, five stars, you know, kids that are incredibly talented and highly recruited. You know, Stockton being a freshman, he's going to run the scout team for Georgia this year. But you certainly have a backup quarterback battle between Brock Vandegrift and Carson Beck. Beck is a little bit older, has been in the program one more year than Brock. So he's got the upper hand as of now, but it's certainly going to be interesting to see how that plays out over the course of this season, because with this being the last year of eligibility for Stetson Bennett, that could really shape Georgia's quarterback battle for next year and who goes into the spring as the starter.
It's going to be great to see, certainly where there's a lot of talent. I know that's one of the things I've always heard Palmer. I might be stating the obvious here, but with Kirby Smart being one heck of a recruiter. In fact, a lot of people say that's why the success of Nick Saban for so long was assistant to Alabama, because Kirby was one of the great recruiters on the staff. And I think that what's great is there's so many – I have close friends that are Georgia fans. My dad graduated from vet school in Georgia in 1972. But there's a lot of people – we know how strong it is in Athens and how – many people want to win so badly for so many years. There'd be some close calls where you think this is the year, and was really happy for Georgia this past season to finally get the national championship and not have to just talk about Herschel Walker, Herschel Walker, Herschel Walker. And there's nothing wrong with Herschel Walker. I'm just saying that you would think that as good of a program, the proud tradition in Athens, it would be more championships. And I think there's more to come with Kirby. Sorry if there's anybody else out there, Alabama fans or anybody else, but I think he's I think you have to put them as the odds on favorite to win it all again. It's going to be very difficult. I know Ohio State's in there, Alabama's in the mix, but and don't forget about Clemson. I think there's a lot of people that are writing Clemson off. I think Clemson's very, very good. And I think our co-host Kyle Barber said last week, but it's like when you have a team like a Clemson and they win 10 games, we'll take that. So, what, Bubba, in our history, we've only had at East Carolina, what, twice with 10 wins? Is that right? The Peach Bowl year and then 2013?
Yeah. But kind of looking at the big picture for this team, kind of the road that Dave was going down, as you look at Georgia's schedule, I think it sets up very well. You do have the road trip in November, when Georgia has to go to Lexington to a very talented Kentucky team. We'll see how Kentucky fares this year. Obviously, Coach Stoops has just done a tremendous job there at a school that has historically struggled. And, he's certainly going to have a statue built of him one day in Lexington. But, what are your thoughts on the schedule as a whole? And like Dave said, the chances of Georgia repeating?
Yeah, going back to what Dave was saying about, you know, how it's been so long and the talk of Herschel Walker, Herschel Walker, Herschel Walker, I saw a fan-created hype video today that, said, hey, it's been a great 41 years since the national championship, and, here's to hoping the next 41 is just as good, because while they didn't win one in that time, up until this past season, there certainly were a lot of really good Georgia football teams. And I think that looking at this year's team, the way that it sets up, like you said, they are, one of the top teams in the country, ranked number three in both the AP and coaches poll behind Alabama and Ohio State, respectively. I think it really sets up for a lot of success this season. If you can avoid slipping up, Georgia will probably be favored by double digits in every game. Even some of those tough games in November, there's a stretch, obviously you've got Oregon out of the gate, top 15 matchup, number 11 team in the country. But the Bulldogs are a 17 and a half point favorite in that game. South Carolina on the road, week 3 could be tough. Again, similar to what Oregon brings to the table with an experienced quarterback, a transfer, a talented quarterback. South Carolina has that in Spencer Rattler there. That could be tough. I think that's an early kickoff, noon kickoff there. It's going to be hot in Columbia. You've got an inexperienced Georgia defense. Maybe they struggle some to get in sync early in the season. But I think once they get into gear, and really once you get past week three, you don't really have a huge test until, October, November. Because as you look at this schedule, Missouri on the road could be tough. I don't think it's terribly challenging. Auburn at home, and obviously we all know that they've got some quarterback problems. It's interesting to see how they, will play out, especially early in the season with LSU and Penn State coming to the Plains. And then as you get past that, you've got Vanderbilt, a bye week, and then it's a really tough stretch there of four games. Florida at a neutral site, home against Tennessee, a Tennessee team that's putting up a lot of points right now as we speak, and one that's going to bring an offense that could challenge an inexperienced Georgia defense. I think they're going to challenge good defenses, and I think Georgia will have a good one, someone that could be challenged by Tennessee in that tempo. And then you go on the road for back-to-back tough games at Mississippi State, again, an offense that presents some tricks. And then Kentucky in Lexington, a game that could, potentially decide the SEC East. Think that there's a lot of, wrapping up the season at the end with Georgia Tech. I have predicted Georgia to go 12-0, to go, into Atlanta for an SEC championship matchup between an undefeated Georgia and an undefeated Alabama, would be a clash of two incredibly good teams, and probably two teams that would make the playoff regardless of the outcome there. But certainly, a lot of football to be played before then.
Final thing we have for you tonight, kind of a big picture topic, obviously with all the success and all the money coming into that program, in the recent seasons and, such a huge passionate fan base and so forth. I know there's been some stadium renovations, or at least plans for renovations, going on there at Sanford Stadium. So tell our viewers about that, making the stadium, more accessible and so forth.
Yeah. So they announced that this spring, back in May, and those plans were officially approved here not too long ago, but they are going to do a little bit of renovation to Sanford Stadium in after this coming football season, the 2022 season, and getting it ready for the 23 season. They're going to add a couple of gates, make the bridge that is so, such a big part of the stadium and the environment there, with the bridge running out by an open into the stadium, that is now going to be a part of the stadium. They're going to have vending. They're going to have, airy concessions out there. You're going to be able to walk in, go in through a gate that puts you out onto what is normally a road, but will be part of the stadium on game day. So that'll happen before the next football season, 2023. And then after 2023, before 2024, they are also going to renovate the south end of the stadium, making concourses bigger, more accessible. They're going to make the stadium a little bit taller, go straight up with it there, as opposed to, outward expansion. They're going to go up and create some more luxury seating. They're going to move the press box. Unfortunately, love my seat right on the 50-yard line there in an open air press box. They're going to move us down into the corner a little bit. Not terrible, but certainly not what I would have wanted. But it makes sense for Georgia and ultimately creates a really good fan experience in what is already a really great one.
Really appreciate the visit tonight, as Thank always, you, Palmer. Tell our viewers how they can check your workout at Dogs HQ.
Yeah, Dogs HQ over in the On3 network of sites, adding a ton of talent by the day. We've got a special going on right now. You can sign up to view all of our plus content behind a paywall for $1 for a full year. Not sure how long that special is going to go on. So if you're thinking about it, I would jump on it. But certainly a great place to get your recruiting coverage, your team coverage, inside scoop, you know, and be a part of a great community there over on our message boards, Dogs HQ. And then you can find me on social media at Palmer Toms.
All right, Palmer, thank you so much. And good luck to the Dogs this year. And we'll see if they can get another championship in that trophy case. And we'll talk to you very good soon. And by the way, happy Labor Day early to you.
Thank you, guys. Y'all have a good one.
All right. See you later.
Now we'll welcome in from Al's Daily, Ryan Wallen. Ryan, we appreciate you coming on such short notice. And we had planned to have former Florida great Shane Matthews on to talk about that game with Utah Utes and beginning of the Billy Napier era, and you know everything going on down at the Swamp. But appreciate you coming on such short notice. I know we just had you on.
No problem, guys. It's always a pleasure. Just getting ready to get the car packed for Duke tomorrow.
Hey, Bubba, I think what we should do is we make Ryan wait so long in the green room. Should we change the name to the Ryan Wallen Room? We'll just dedicate the green room to Ryan. I mean, he spent more time in the green room than any other guest, I think, in the history of our show going on 5 years. I apologize over that, Ryan. We're trying really hard to do better.
No, blame Dairy Queen. Totally fine. I blame Dairy Queen. As long as you can supply the sup dog wings, I'll be happy to sit in the green room as long as you need me to.
All right, sounds good. Big matchup, obviously. It's crazy to think college football is here, but it is here. Temple traveling down to Durham with a big this is going to be interesting for Duke fans, too, because welcoming a new era with Mike Elko as the coach, not David Cutcliffe. David Cutcliffe has certainly moved on to the SEC now. I think he's a special assistant to the commissioner, I believe. To Greg Sankey, but now you have a new era in Durham, and who knows with Temple, they can go. I know we've talked a little bit about it, but a big matchup on Saturday, and maybe Temple can turn things around this year.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, it's been a thing that, you know, it's hard to judge what we're actually going to see out of both teams tomorrow night. You know, we kind of get a feel at Temple of what we possibly are going to see, but it's hard to kind of see what Duke's going to do because they obviously are bringing in a whole new coaching staff as well. Temple has some familiarity with the two coordinators that Mike Elko did hire at Duke, and Kevin Johns, who was the former Memphis offensive coordinator, and Rob Smith, who they had played last year when he was at Rutgers. So they did see both of these guys last year, so they probably have some idea of what they're going to see on the field, but you never know. You know, whole new system. Mike Elko's a defensive guy himself. Ran that 4-2-5 down at Texas A&M, which, you know, had a lot of success down there for the Aggies. So you don't know how much of an influence he's going to have in the defense with Rob Smith combining their brains together to, you know, put something on the field that hopefully is going to get Duke turned around. But, you know, and Mike Elko has even said that this week in his press conferences for Duke that I've listened to, that, you know, he doesn't know really what's going to be on the field. And Sam Drayton said the same thing on Monday, that it's going to be hard to judge what you're actually going to see. But, you know, Temple's focused on Temple right now. He said he has preached that. Not so much worried about the opponent. They're going to show up. They're going to play the game. And they got to make sure that they don't make the mistakes that are going to cost this game against Duke.
No doubt about it. In fact, Ryan, just curious as far as this week, game week for Temple, anything, any injuries, God forbid, or anything that's of note that our viewers would like to know about heading into the weekend?
Yeah, so the only name that we had gotten on Monday was that tight end David Martin Robinson, who is one of the older guys and probably one of the best athletes on Temple's team, is dealing with some sort of injury right now. He's going to be a game day decision tomorrow, so I guess we'll see tomorrow during pregame warmups if he's going through those. Not sure what he's specifically dealing with. Didn't see anything visible on him when we were at practice last week, but he was not going through full warm-ups and all. He was sitting on the bike on the side. So, he's a guy that unfortunately suffered a devastating injury last year at the beginning of the year in the Rutgers game, caused him to miss most of the season, came back a little early. He even admitted at the end of the season and might have not have been as healthy as what he had liked. And unfortunately seems something is lingering over into his now senior year here at Temple. So I guess we'll have to see if he ends up playing tomorrow. There were was a mention by Drayton that there are a few other guys that could be game day decisions tomorrow, but no specific names there yet. Looking at our depth chart for this week, we can kind of maybe guess on two of those guys, but I'm not going to name drop any of those just for the fact that I don't feel like being wrong.
Oh, I'm used to being wrong, Ryan. It's misery loves company. Come on aboard. No, I'm kidding. But certainly I know with Temple and Duke both, with Coach Drayton, and now you have Mike Elko. That's going to be really interesting. And then I think it'll be interesting to see. You know, I think with Duke especially, Duke has really gone downhill the last few years. I think COVID really hurt Duke more than a lot of teams with the program. And maybe some people could argue that it was the end of an era with Cutcliffe, but Coach Cut was tremendous for that program. It'll be great to see. And then with Temple, you guys have had so many great coaches over the years. It'll be interesting to see how that turns out. But we talked to you a little bit, but how are the fans with Temple? Are they? Do you think they're going to be patient with a new coach?
I think they're going to, because I think they saw just how bad the program was the past two seasons, and particularly last year, how non-competitive the team had gotten in games, especially those last seven games of the season. So I think they know that there's a rebuild in place. It's going to take a year or two to get this thing straightened out. But, you know, Temple fans, they're Philly fans, and Philly fans can tend to be impatient at times. But I think this is a little bit of a different situation. There's not a lot of high expectations for Temple this year. I have not seen anybody predict them more than 500 this year at best, and that's something that, you know, I don't see them getting to in Drayton's first year. If they do, you know, that would be a miracle in itself. And Drayton might be getting some high quality offers if he would happen to then go over 500 next year. And he might be another, you know, Jeff Collins, where he could bail on Temple after 2 years, depending on if the money and the situation is right. But I don't see that being the case. I think this is more of a slow rebuild. I think Drayton sees that as a rebuild. He mentioned in his press conference last week that, you know, not all the problems are going to get fixed right away, and fans can't expect that. But as long as they see that the goals are in place and there's progress and they're working towards those goals, that they are determined that they're going to turn this around and, you know, restore Temple to this team that it was, you know, under Matt Rhule and Jeff Collins.
I had a quick question, Bub. I'm sorry, and I'll let you – I'm sorry. I had a quick follow-up. As far as Jeff Collins, one thing I've been dying to ask you, and I just realized I've never asked you, Ryan, did Jeff Collins not recruit well? I know he was there so quick and he left. Maybe I'm being too harsh on him. I know he did well there. But, you know, Matt Rhule was like, wow, you know, he's got Temple tough. Then you have Collins. He just seems quickly to go to Georgia Tech. Is that fair to say he didn't recruit well, or what happened there that all of a sudden Temple went from this juggernaut that, you know, like you're scared to play Temple to now, like East Carolina, we feel like we have a chance against Temple?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it was. He was a flashy guy. You know, he was very much about the perform, like the showmanship. He was a very good showman, and he sold the program very well. One of the best promoters. And I thought that was, you know, the real peak of Temple in terms of marketing itself was when Collins was the head coach. And I think he brought in guys simply based on the showmanship more so than, you know, maybe being a full-on evaluator of talent and looking for more of the diamonds in the rough that Matt Rhule had done. Not to say that there weren't good players that Collins brought in, but a lot of the guys that he did bring in ended up transferring out, or they made it 1 year on the team and then they left the program. And it kind of did put Temple in a bad spot before Rod Carey eventually took over. And then you can say, you know, that maybe Rod didn't do a great job at recruiting though either in certain areas. But I mean, there are some guys on this team that are legitimate NFL talent that, you know, Rod brought in as well. So, you know, you can't say that really it was necessarily all recruiting, but, you know, I would say maybe with Jeff, it was just more so they didn't fully evaluate the types of players they were bringing in rather than, you know, just maybe looking for the stars, chasing stars instead of diamonds in the rough.
Yeah, back to what you were saying, Ryan, as far as Temple having its work cut out to win six games and become bowl eligible. You know, if this game on tomorrow is absolutely huge, because if you do find a way to win it, then a 3-1 September is very possible, because you have Lafayette and then Rutgers and then also UMass. What, that's three consecutive home games?
Yes.
And then, but like you mentioned, and once league play rolls around in October, you have 3 out of 4 on the road, trips to Memphis, UCF, and Navy. And then in November, you have a game at Houston, and then Cincinnati and East Carolina come to Lincoln Financial.
Yeah, you know, I think the key for Temple's success this season is going to be they're going to have to get off to a quick start. And, you know, 2-2 is going to be good to get off to that start, because, I mean, you should pick up those wins over UMass and Lafayette. I mean, that's expected wins. And if they drop those games, there's going to be some serious head scratching. And I think that's when your fans will start maybe questioning the Drayton regime if there is some issues in those games and beating those two opponents. But, you know, then you look back to Matt Rhule in 2013, his team lost to Fordham and Idaho in that season. So, I, you know, sometimes you just got to also give it some time in developing, as Drayton has mentioned, and as I feel that this is going to take. But I think Temple is too talented to not be able to beat those teams this season. But like you said, if somehow Temple pulls out the win tomorrow night, I think 3-1 is very possible. And then once conference play rolls around, your first half of the conference schedule is a lot easier than your second half. So I think if you can somehow find a way to beat Tulsa, beat USF, beat Navy, I mean, you're looking at 5 wins, and 5 wins is it's definitely a win in my book for this season, or even possibly 6, and then you're sitting at 500. But who knows, even if you pick up some of those wins, that could really instill some confidence in this team. And, you know, maybe they play above expectations this year and really make some noise and, you know, set themselves up for a good position for next year.
Now back to this game with the Blue Devils tomorrow night. I know there's obviously so many unknowns for both of these clubs, but, you know, if you had to, you know, point to 2 or 3 things, and, you know, outside of the obvious as far as taking care of the football, et cetera, et cetera. You know, what are, you know, 2 or 3 keys that you really see in order for the Owls to be victorious in Durham?
Well, I think first off is that we need to see how Temple's offensive line is going to play this year. Cause last year it was absolutely abysmal how the offensive line played. And that was, you know, one of the main reasons that Temple really struggled last year is the offensive line was not getting pushed. They were getting, you know, beat off the line badly by defensive linemen. They couldn't open holes for the running backs. And the running game struggled mightily because of it. So this year, obviously, they're returning 2 veteran starters, 4-year starters at tackle, in Isaac Moore and Adam Klein. Both those guys are single-digit guys named by Drayton 2 weeks ago. So, you know, you have that edge secure. Where I worry is the interior D-line or O-line is, and they're going to have 3 new full-time starters there. And Wisdom Quarshi at center, who did play a little bit last year at that position, played fairly well, but, you know, can he keep that up? Can he get the snaps off without, you know, having a bad exchange with DeJuan Mathis? And then you have 2 new guards, and one in a Houston transfer, James Famineau, who looks like he's a legit dude. You wouldn't think that he's only played 1 year or 1 game of football in his career at Houston, and he came in and obviously won a starting job for Temple. And then you have a guy in Jermaine Donaldson who has rarely seen the field for Temple, if at all. But he won the starting guard spot opposite Faminu, and he's a guy that was initially recruited by offensive line coach Chris Wiesehan in 2018, before Wiesehan left, kind of sat on the bench under Rod Carey's regime. But now, I guess with Wiesehan back, he really, you know, took off and had a change of heart, change of attitude, added some weight, and obviously performed well enough throughout fall camp to win that other guard spot. So that's going to be something interesting to see, especially going up against Duke's defensive line, which seems to be a little depleted. I noticed on their depth chart, they have a walk-on listed as their second string defensive tackle. So that seems like they're thin there, especially in the interior. So seems like both teams might have some struggles on the interior of their lines. That's my main matchup to watch. As far as other things, I think, you know, just seeing how Dwan Mathis performs. Did he grow? How is he going to handle the pressure of, you know, this now being his second season? Starting for Temple, third year, third new system that he's learning, obviously having played at Georgia in 2020. So now under Danny Langsdorf, how has he adopted that offense? And again, can the offensive line protect him? And you know, he's not going to be running for his life, or, you know, he's going to have some time back there to throw it up to some of these receivers that he has. And he has some talented receivers, especially Adonicus Sanders, who's a Georgia Tech transfer, who coincidentally enough caught the game-winning touchdown against Duke last year in Georgia Tech's win against them with under a minute to play. So I know Sanders is looking forward to that game. He said he likes playing Georgia Tech, or he likes playing against Duke. So that'll be interesting to see. And I'm interested to see the cornerbacks, how they match up against Duke's wide receivers, because Duke has some talented wide receivers too, especially Jalen Calhoun. Temple's, you know, they're starting two brand new corners, a guy who was a redshirt or a true freshman last year, redshirted, in Jalen McMurray, who has come in and earned a single digit, and he has the chance to only be the second player ever to wear a single digit for 4 years for Temple. Kind of came out of nowhere, possibly could be one of those diamonds in the rough that Carey recruited. So want to see how he matches up against Calhoun. I assume he's going to be on him most of the game. And then the other corner position is won by a guy who was sitting behind Keyshawn Paul and Cameron Ruiz last year, and Elijah Clark. I think that's just going to be a defensive scheme thing, that Temple's looking for taller corners to play on the outside, and they're going to leave their smaller guys to the inside in the slot. But I just want to see how they're going to, you know, handle the pressure of being two new corners in the system in this defense that Temple's going to run, and we'll see how that's going to go. But I think, like I said, Temple's going to have to get off to a fast start. Last year, they struggled mightily in the first quarter. They only scored one first quarter touchdown all season. That was a big struggle. And especially when you're playing from behind, it's hard to, you know, get that motivation to get back in the game. So they need to start fast, establish the run. And I'm intrigued, especially to see how that offensive line performs.
And one final non-Temple question I had for you. It's Thursday when we're doing the show live, and of course it'll be archived when the show's done. But how are you feeling about the backyard brawl with West Virginia Pitt? I know you're a Temple guy, but things up there, do people, how much do they care outside of West Virginia and Pitt about that game?
In my area, not so much. In my area, it's mostly Penn State people. Yeah. So I would suspect most Pennsylvanians tonight are tuned into the Penn State-Purdue game. Right. But I personally have always liked the backyard brawl. I mean, you know, that's just such a classic game, you know, the rivalry there. And it's good to be have that game back after 11 years of being not played, obviously, with having West Virginia move to the Big 12 and whatnot in that meet in that time. So it's good to have that back. I'm excited. And I noticed something when they brought that game on the air that they talked about, you know, there's something to geography and geographic rivalries in college football. And, you know, that's kind of ironic based on, you know, all the landscape changes in college football that's going on. But, you know, that saying in particular was right, that, you know, I think there is something to geography and geographic record or rivalries, because, you know, those are the games that draw people. Those are the ones that you get hyped up about. You know, you have big tailgates for, you have a lot of people show out for, and just creates a different environment in the stadium. So would like to see Temple have a little bit more of them, but, you know, they'll have their game in a couple of weeks when Rutgers comes to town. And I know that's the big rivalry for Temple right now. So hopefully Temple can, can knock them off on the field and get some payback a little bit from last year.
Speaking of rivalries, NC State, ECU, do you have a pick in that game? We're getting ready to do our picks, so I'm going to put you on the spot on our show. You like NC State, I take it.
I'm not sure because, you know, everybody's hyping up NC State so much, and, you know, they obviously have a wonderful quarterback in Devin Leary, and, you know, he's going to play in the NFL next year. But, you know, ECU's got a lot of talent too, and I saw that last year that they really looked like they were turning the corner, and I think they're going to surprise some people this year and make some noise. So I've never been huge on NC State. I feel like every year they're hyped up and they never end up performing up to standards, even though they end up, you know, sitting maybe at 8 wins every year. I know a lot of people pick them as the favorite in the ACC, but I don't know if they're that good yet. Sure. For the fans of Pirate Nation, I'll pick ECU, because that would be such a major win.
There we go. A sentimental pick. I love it.
I love Colton Ayler. I love the offense that you guys have. Obviously, the defense has picked it up. I'll say ECU wins, but I wouldn't be surprised to see that go either way.
I figured it out, Bubba. He's tired of waiting in the waiting room and the green room. He's like, man, the food is not good enough in the green room, and you're making me wait all this time. So he's like, yeah, I'll pick ECU. So next time, we'll make sure you don't have to wait so long in the green room, which we, by the way, if you're just joining us, we renamed it the Ryan Wallen room after him, because he's waited longer than anybody else. You hold that record on the Sports Objective, my friend.
Hey, I'll take any record I can get, right?
No doubt. Good luck to you. Be safe going to Durham, a big game, and I can't wait to – that's going to be interesting. That's one of the games I'm curious about to see with as Bubba and I were talking about off air and new eras, so to speak. We'll see how that goes. And I want to wish you happy Labor Day. Before we let you go, we want to give you a chance to plug Owls Daily and social media, and we'll get out of here.
Of course. Thank you guys for having me on. As always, you can always follow me on Twitter at RyanWallen247, or you can find all our stuff on the 247 Sports Network at owlsdaily.com.
Appreciate you, brother. Thank you so much for pinch hitting there for Shane Matthews, and we'll see you again real soon.
No problem. Thanks, guys.
Have a good one, brother. All right. The Inside Slant, you'll see great guys like Ryan Wallen, and Shane Matthews had to reschedule, but he'll be back with about the Florida Gators. And I tell you what, Bubba, I'm so excited. We're going to talk about a few games, and I know you picked the game, so we're going to talk about that. By the way, I want to give a shout-out to our good friends at Porky's Backyard Barbecue, as they're doing our tailgate on Saturday, and they're sponsoring our tailgate. They're going to have a lot of great food out there with us. Find us on the tailgate lots right close to the practice field, and you'll see, actually, we have a blue tent. We need to get an ECU tent, but that's a whole other show, as they say. Bubba, are you ready to talk about the games really quick? And we'll do like a rapid fire in our picks and get out of here. Well, we have another interview with Adam Witten. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no problem. But that interview with Adam Witten, the play-by-play voice of App State Mountaineers, about the big in-state matchup with North Carolina traveling to Boone for the initial time this weekend, which is also a noon kick, and that one is on ESPNU. But that conversation was actually had Wednesday afternoon, and right around a half an hour with Adam Witten of App State, and we'll go to that here in just the next 5 to 10 minutes. But, we'll go ahead and dive into some of our picks. So, you know, we'll start off with that very game, App State hosting North Carolina. Tar Heels obviously victorious in a big way, but they did have their struggles at times against FAMU last weekend in that 56-24 win. Tar Heels is basically a pick 'em, UNC minus one. I'll go with App State. Hello? I think Dave's having some technical issues.
Yeah, I'm back.
Okay, he had frozen up on me for a second there. But, Dave, who do you take in that North Carolina App State game? I took the Mountaineers, if you couldn't hear me.
Yeah, I couldn't, unfortunately. I'm leaning I'll go with App. I'm leaning with App. I tell you what I thought. UNC struggled. You guys, we were talking in the group text that we have for the show about they struggled on defense, what I saw of the game. And what was it, like 20 players that FAMU didn't have? I mean, yeah, Florida, it was like, wow. And it's in Boone. They have one of the best, the Rock is one of the best places to see a game. Oh my goodness. I just have to say that App wins a close one. UNC has a lot of talent, but Gene Chizik, man, I don't know. I'm just not confident about the defense. Maybe they'll rise to a big occasion, but we've seen App State win a lot of football games, and I don't think they care that it's the Tar Heels in Chapel Hill. No disrespect to Mac Brown of the Tar Heels, but that fan base and that program is rocking right now at App State, and we don't need to waste any more time. Everybody knows about them. We'll go to the next game.
Yeah, one other comment about that one very quickly, and that is that just that you talk about Gene Chizik coming back to resurrect that Tar Heel defense that struggled so much a season ago, and you have Chase Bryce, an experienced quarterback that had an excellent 2021 in leading App State to 10 victories. So I think, with the way they can run the football, we'll see how they're able to run it against North Carolina. But, they're really committed to the run. They do have a new offensive coordinator. But, I think we'll see another tremendous game. You remember last time these two met in 2019. App won on a blocked field goal on the final play of the game. So should be a tremendous football game no matter which way it goes. Moving on, game two that we'll pick is Cincinnati traveling to Fayetteville, Arkansas to take on the Razorbacks. The Hogs, a 7-point favorite in this one.
Yeah, I know that everybody is picking the Hogs, and they're doing the Hogs and Arkansas. I tell you what, and I can't believe people are going to say this, but I just have a weird feeling, Bubba. I'm going Cincinnati. I don't know why. Maybe I'm crazy, but I'm going against what the experts say. I'm going to go with Cincinnati on this one. So I might be 0-2 with my picks, but so far we'll see how that turns out. But I'm going with Cincinnati.
Give me Sam Pittman's crew. I love the job he's done there at Arkansas. I'll take Sam Pittman and the Razorbacks to cover that 7 points. Dana Holgorsen and the Houston Cougars had a tremendous 12-win season, I think it was a season ago, 12-2, if I'm not mistaken. And Houston is a 4.5-point favorite at future AAC member after they will have moved on to the Big 12, and that is UTSA, the Roadrunners. It'll be interesting to see what type of crowd they have for that in-state matchup against the Cougars. I will take Houston to cover the 4.5.
All right, so I'm going you said Houston?
Yeah, I'll take the Cougars to cover the 4.5. I definitely think it will be a competitive game. UTSA is a solid team and program, but I do think that Houston will probably win that one by, I'd say, 10 to 14 points or something at least.
Yeah, I know Kyle picked UTSA. He's called an upset special, and I have a lot of respect for UTSA, the Roadrunners, but I'm going with I have to admit, I'll go with Houston on the Cougs.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. Sure, Kyle, he has legitimate reasons to take UTSA for sure, but I'm just laughing at it because, he's really been, outspoken lately about Dana Holgorsen and the Houston Cougars and how much he loves the skullet that Coach Holgorsen sports. I believe it was shout out to Johnny Gardner there. I believe it was Johnny that coined that one with the skullet. But
Johnny, yep.
Our next game that we'll take a stab at, and that is JMU, the Dukes, on their first game as an FBS team. They're 5.5-point favorites at home against the Blue Raiders in Middle Tennessee. I'll take JMU to cover.
Yeah, I'm in this. We're going to keep it. We'll keep it as short as we can on these. I'm going to go JMU. I agree with you. What a great program they have there, Cignetti and company there in Harrisonburg.
Our next game is BYU traveling to Tampa to take on Coach Scott and his USF Bulls. BYU's an 11-point favorite. I do think USF will be improved, but I think BYU and Kalani Sitake's club will cover the 11 points.
Yeah, Bubba, that's the, one of the games, as you know, on the schedule for East Carolina. I'm not saying we have an easy schedule, but BYU is really good. Having said that, I think they're going to win the game. And you're right, USF, I think, is going to be they're not quite there, but I think they're the most improved team. They will be the most improved team in the American this year. Not saying they're going to be like top dog or anything like that, but that would be a hot take. But I'm not going out on a limb that much. But I do think that they're definitely a much better team with Coach Scott for sure. And but I will go with BYU all day long, as I think they're going to make some significant noise in the college football landscape this year.
Game six, taking a look at, we'll go ahead and pick that Georgia-Oregon game. That is a game I know Matt Semenza and Jay Sunhalter on Sonny and Semenza last night. They certainly were in agreement that Georgia would cover the 17.5, and I agree that I think the Dogs will, you know, cover that 17 points against Oregon as they travel east.
No doubt. I like I said, Kirby Smart's done a heck of a job, and I know they won the national championship. It's very difficult, but I think Georgia is way – you may argue about their defense, Bubba, not as good, but my gosh, they're still going to be really good, even if they're not as good as that unbelievable – one of the best defenses of all time. But I'm going Georgia over Oregon.
Our seventh game that we'll pick – you have Louisville going to the Carrier Dome. Scott Satterfield's club is a 4.5-point favorite over the Orange. That's a tough one. Syracuse, they've been so Jekyll and Hyde, you know, under Coach Dino Babers. But I think I'll go with Louisville to cover that 4.5. It seems like Louisville blew them out a season ago. There in Louisville.
Yeah, you're right. I haven't thought about that game. I knew that game was coming up. Yeah, I'll go with you on that. I'll go Louisville to cover, but man, that's going to be a lot closer than what you would expect in years past.
Then you have TCU traveling to Boulder. They're playing Colorado at Folsom Field, and TCU is a 2-touchdown favorite as they begin the Sonny Dykes era. So who do you like in that one between the Horned Frogs and the Buffs?
So TCU or Colorado?
Correct.
I'm going to go TCU. How do you feel?
Oh, that's a tough one.
I don't know.
There has been a lot of hype. It's just, you know, they do have a lot returning, and Colorado really struggled to score a season ago. So I'll take TCU. I don't think it'll be totally lopsided.
Right.
First game on the road like that, but I do think they'll cover the 14. I could see if Colorado's offense is anything like it was a season ago, I could see like a 37-20. 34-17, something like that.
It'll be interesting to see how that goes for sure. What's the next game, Bubba?
A couple more. We'll take a stab. You have number 7 Utah traveling to the Swamp. They're a 3-point favorite over Billy Napier and the Gators in Billy Napier's debut there at U of F.
Yeah. Okay. So this is a tough one. I've been debating this one back and forth. I haven't talked to you about this game, Bubba. Oh gosh. I like Napier a lot. I like Anthony. That quarterback is one of my favorite quarterbacks. By the way, Bubba, we hadn't talked about him because your quarterback, Anthony Richardson. I like him a lot. He's very athletic. I don't know. I want to pick Florida really bad. And hopefully Chrissy Semenza won't get mad at me. I'm going with the Utes, and I hate to admit that, but I'm going with the Utes, Bubba.
Yeah, I don't think Chrissy's gonna allow Matt to come back on the show anymore. But yeah, no, I agree with you. I think Billy Napier will do a solid job there in Gainesville, but I do like Utah to cover that -3. And I was looking over the remaining slate of games, trying to find one that, you know, that had a better, you know, a little bit closer line. Let's see. Let's go with this one. You have Boise State traveling to Corvallis to take on the Beavers. Oregon State, a 3-point favorite over the Broncos.
Wow, you would do that to me. that's why you did that. It's good. Okay, so Oregon State or all right, I'm going with Oregon State. That's my pick.
I like Oregon State as well. Boise's
not good. Boise anymore.
They were good a season ago, but Oregon State, you know, they've had a bit of a resurgence, and I think at home that they will find a way to win that game against Boise. So we'll see how we do picking those 10 games, and you know, we'll get Matt and Matt's picked a few of those already with he and Jay, and we'll see what Kyle thinks about a lot of those games. I know you said he picked UTSA to upset Houston, taking the Roadrunners +4.5. But we'll have those records for you next week. And just really excited. We have a lot of tremendous programming headed our viewers and listeners' way, you know, here in the next coming few days.
Yeah, the Pirate Breakdown with Sutton Young. Want to give him a shout-out. How about Sonny and Semenza? Of course, this show, we have the Pirate Preview on Tuesday night, Coach Connor's show. We have so many great shows coming up. And then, Bubba, I know we have one you've done with John Casaza, the first quarterback. His team was the first to ever beat NC State. And that's coming up tomorrow, right? With your show tomorrow?
Yes. A Pirate's Life for Me. That will air tomorrow at noon. And you'll hear from John Casaza, like they said, led the Pirates to a 31-15 win over NC State back in 1971 at Carter Finley Stadium.
Yes, sir.
And it was great taking a trip down memory lane, reliving that 71 game with Casaza. And I look forward to catching up with him this weekend. Maybe we'll get a few thoughts from him there on site at Dowdy Ficklin Stadium, because I know he'll be in attendance and you're probably tailgating with my parents and I, and we'll see. Maybe we can get the thoughts of some other Pirate letter winners this weekend. I know I'm probably going to be able to catch up with Lamont Chapel, who was a receiver for the Pirates in the mid to late 90s, so, you know, on those teams that had so much success under Steve Logan. And then he was a key receiver on that 99 team that was so good.
No doubt about it. Hey, Bubba. And of course, we have our from LNK Homes. I want to give a shout out to Kevin Walker, KK, LNK Custom Homes. Of course, we want to thank him for all. He's been not only doing great work, but he loves. We need to get him back on, Bubba. He does a great job with the analysis of that. And just want to give him a shout out. By the way, we'll have him on very soon. By the way, Bubba, I want to give two quick things. Our friend Dr. Gary Overton, want to give him a shout out as he ended his 40. We need to get him on too, Bubba. 45 years with ECU ended yesterday, his last day on the job. Unbelievable. We're going to miss. That's a huge void. We'll talk later.
No doubt.
We love Coach O. We'll have him on very soon. And one more thing, Bubba, I know we're running long tonight. I want to give a shout out to two of our friends, Bubba, of the show, Brian Pascal, Coach Pascal, and Coach Phil Willard, the athletic director. Both of those guys are friends of the show. And Williamston, we want to make sure that we want to give them a shout out. Riverside Martin wins tonight against a good Northside team, 40-28. They're 3-0 in the season. They've got to play Chocowinity Southside High School next week. So just want to give them a shout out. It's my alma mater. So I'm really proud of the job they're doing, Bubba. You know, we were talking about COVID years and all that, but they've done a nice job. I think they have, they built the program back up. They have 28 players right now. It's a 1A school. It doesn't sound like a lot, but considering where they were and COVID, they've worked really hard to build those numbers up and the strength and conditioning. And one more person, Jim Bob Bryant, my classmate, he was a great quarterback for Harold Robinson for H-Rob back in the early 90s and went on to graduate at East Carolina, another Pirate. And Bubba, I want to pitch it to you. I know we have a great interview before we get out of here with Adam Witten, right?
Yeah, and now we'll go ahead and go to that interview with the play-by-play voice of the App State Mountaineers, Adam Witten. He and I caught up on Wednesday afternoon talking about North Carolina traveling to Kid Brewer Stadium there at The Rock for the first time in program history. Tar Heels are a one-point favorite, and you know, that's a game with so much anticipation. And, you know, as Pirate fans, you think back to 99 when State came to Greenville for the first time, or in 2003 when North Carolina came to Greenville for the first time. So can definitely, you know, relate to all the excitement with that App State fan base, you know, with a historical game. But at the same time, you know, even though that game will have probably the largest crowd in school history, and you know, there's so much surrounding it, and don't let folks tell you, oh, this is just the biggest game in that program's history, because they've had so much success. Just because it's the largest attended and it's against North Carolina does not mean that that's the case, like a lot of folks will lead you to believe, and you know where I'm going with that. But then without any further ado, let's go to that conversation with the play-by-play voice of App State, Adam Witten. And right now on the Inside Slant on the Sports Objective, we're very excited to preview a huge matchup this weekend within the state of North Carolina. And to do so, very excited to be joined by the play-by-play voice of the App State Mountaineers, Adam Witten. Adam, welcome back in.
Yeah, thank you, Bob. I appreciate it, man. This is one of those signs that college football is right around the corner. So whenever I get a chance to talk to you guys, this always means that we're really, really close to kickoff. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, no doubt. Enjoy catching up whenever we have the opportunity to talk football, and you know, specifically App State football. But, you know, this matchup, this is one that's been anticipated for quite some time. You know, being an East Carolina guy myself, it's, you know, I go back about 20 years, you know, when North Carolina and NC State made that trip to Greenville for the first time. So, you know, before we really dive into some of the specifics of this App State team, you know, just talk about what's at stake, you know, what's at hand rather this weekend.
Yeah, you know, it's a good question. I've been asked that a few times in terms of, hey, what does this game mean? I mean, we know what it means just in terms of the buildup and the hype and the anticipation. I mean, it's been billed as the biggest event in the town of Boone because we're expecting record crowds. And I know we'll get into that here in just a little bit. But in terms of what's at stake from a results standpoint, this is about competition for the best program in the state, in my opinion. You know, whether East Carolina and App State and NC State and North Carolina and even Wake Forest now with what Dave Clawson is doing, you know, they've all had their moments and their spurts where they've won games like this against the other teams in the state. And you mentioned when East Carolina got a chance to host some of these schools, you know, in those days of Ruffin McNeil, like they were winning these games and it meant a lot. You know, App, because of its track record since joining the FBS, they've won more games than any team in this state. They're the only team to win 13 games during a season at the FBS level in this state. That was in 2019, the last time they beat North Carolina in Chapel Hill. And so I think when you really distill it down, what this game really means to the App State fan base is trying to continue to bolster that resume of who's the best football team in the state of North Carolina.
Undoubtedly, and it's certainly a valid argument to say the least, with everything you rattled off there with what the App State program has accomplished. And you referenced that 2019 matchup. It's hard to believe that that's been 3 years now. I remember I was, you know, headed to Greenville and listening to the game, and I went back and watched it later on. Man, what a matchup that was. And, you know, coming down to the very last play, and if this Saturday is anything like that, how much fun will that be?
Yeah, that game is is one that we'll remember for a long time because of just how much drama there was late. And App has had a tendency of playing these games that just come down to the wire. They've started winning some of these games against FBS competition, but they can't ever do it comfortably. You know, whether you go back to the Tennessee game in 2016, Penn State in 2018, the Wake Forest game in 2017, and then the two wins over North Carolina and South Carolina in 2019, they all came down to the final seconds. And I'm hoping that this one will be similar to that. I wouldn't argue with an App State blowout win for sure when there's no drama at the end. But yeah, I think we want to see an exciting game. The fans want to be treated to something special because this is going to be a special moment for both programs. So yeah, if we get a similar game to what we had in Chapel Hill in 2019, where you had big plays, big moments on special teams and on defense and guys just making tremendous individual plays throughout the game, comes down to a last second field goal at the conclusion. Yeah, I would be okay with a similar style of game coming up this weekend.
Another interesting nugget or sidebar to this matchup. I know a lot of App State fans, or probably most App State and many North Carolina fans, understand and realize this, but you know, other people who may be tuned in may not, and that is that Mac Brown was the head coach at App State, and then he also has a mountain home right there in the area. So that's an interesting kind of sidebar to this matchup.
Yeah, he has spent a lot of time speaking about the things that he loves about not just what App State has done as a football program, but just about the high country of North Carolina. And you mentioned he does have a vacation home in the mountains. He was the head coach for one season with the Mountaineers, but he still stayed close. And Sean Clark made reference to this when we had him on our radio show the other night, is that, you know, he's leaned on Mac Brown as a mentor in this industry. Mac Brown has been a very successful head coach at both North Carolina and Texas. And because of his ties to the state and that particular part of the state, people like Sean Clark, and he's got a relationship with Jerry Moore. They look at Mac Brown as someone to seek advice. And when Sean Clark had his first year as a head coach, right in the middle of the COVID pandemic in 2020, you know, Mac was somebody that he could talk to for advice and about handling a tough situation and being a first year head coach. And so, yeah, that's another interesting narrative around this game is Mac Brown's familiarity with App State and Boone and the surrounding high country. And so it makes for a very interesting matchup in a lot of different ways, but certainly the Mac Brown ties to this program and this part of the state will just add to that.
Since Coach Clark took over for Eli Drinkwitz when he moved on to Missouri after that one stellar season, Coach Clark has done a tremendous job. So the bar is set so high there at App State, and you have a season like last year where you don't win a championship, within that program. It's not a failure by any means, but the bar has just been set so high that some of the fans and so forth may view it as such.
Yeah, it's winning 10 games is a pretty big accomplishment at a lot of places, and it is at App State. That's nothing to scoff at. But when a 10 win season does not include a conference championship and it doesn't include a win in a bowl game, yeah, that's going to leave a little bit of a sour taste to close the year, because App State was 10-2 in the regular season, but finished the year 10-4 with losses in the conference championship and the bowl game. So yeah, Sean Clark would absolutely be one to tell you, no, 2021 was not as successful as we wanted it to be. And he's still chasing that first conference championship, but that's what motivates him. When he goes into the office and he's out on the practice field and he's studying film with everybody else, like, those are the things that are motivating him. He knows, because he's played here and he's coached here and he's been a part of the success at different stages of this program. He knows what the standard is. He knows what the culture is. And so you've got the right person who understands not only what it takes to win it, but how important it is to be a conference champion at this level and at App State. And so, to me, Bubba, my expectations is, I always like to say that if the program that you care about is playing relevant games late in the season, that's I don't know that you should ask for much more, because you're in it. You're there. You're not always going to win a conference championship every year. You're not going to win a bowl game every year. It's just that stuff just doesn't happen year after year. Eventually, it's not going to go your way. But as long as you're relevant and playing interesting games that are of significance throughout the season, I think that's, from my perspective, that's a more reasonable expectation. But you know, there's a pretty high standard at App, and Sean Clark would be the first to tell you that. No, we want to win conference championships every year.
There's some new blood on the offensive staff, on third offensive coordinator now. So, you know, tell us about that new OC that's coming over from Central Michigan, and you know what we can expect to see, because you know we've always heard, and it's the App State offense, not necessarily that OC's approach to things.
Yeah, it's actually a fifth different offensive coordinator in the last 5 years, and so that's tough, because not only, you know, that can sometimes be tougher than changing head coaches, is, you know, you've got coaches and quarterbacks. You know, you take like a Zach Thomas, for instance. Zach Thomas was coached by three different head coaches and three different offensive coordinators, with Scott Satterfield. And then you moved on to Tony Peterson with Eli Drinkwitz. And then you moved on to, you moved on to Eli Drinkwitz, and then you moved on to Tony Peterson with Sean Clark. Then you go to Frank Ponce last year, and now Kevin Barbe this season. So, you know, for Chase Bryce, he's a second year starter at quarterback. He's got a new coach and offensive coordinator the second time around. So you're always having to reintroduce that dynamic year after year. And that's tough to do. To build that and do it differently every single season. So that being said, I love what Kevin Barbe has brought to this offense, at least through the preseason. He's got a very creative mind. I think he's got a really good feel for the game. He works well with Chase. They've developed an incredible chemistry already. And I cannot wait to see what new wrinkles this offense may have with him, you know, calling the plays on Saturday. So Kevin Barbe, while it is another new offensive coordinator, the excitement is sky high in terms of what he can do.
Chase certainly had an excellent season a year ago. And if you would just quickly sum up the 2021 for Chase, and then, you know, talk about some of the skilled talent around him this year. I know last year he had a ton of veteran wide receivers. This year, still that stable of running backs, and I think you still have a lot of talent at the receiver position. It's just not as proven.
Yeah, I think that's saying it accurately. Just they're untested. You know, they are unproven, but immensely talented at the wide receiver position. But you know, back to your question on Chase. You know, last year he set the single season record for passing yards, and that's beating out somebody like Armani Edwards. Now, Armani Edwards was more of a total offense threat. No one, I think, will ever touch his total offense record, combining rushing and passing. But for somebody to break a record, a single season record that was held by Armani Edwards at Appalachian, that's saying something. And Chase did that last year. You know, his touchdown to interception ratio was great. He's very accurate. He throws a really good deep ball, which I think that is something that we've been missing in this offense, the consistent, accurate deep ball to make this offense more explosive. And Chase is so good at utilizing every last second of the pocket and delivers the ball well under pressure. He has such a command of the pocket and is so confident in his abilities, even when pressure is coming in on him. So, those are his big strengths. You know, I think in this offense, to be successful, you've got to be able to be kind of a dual threat in some ways. And Chase is not the fastest guy, but he's got to be able to show the ability to pull it on some of these read option looks. So that's maybe a new element that could be added to his game this year in spots. But, yeah, the wide receivers are definitely unproven, as you mentioned, but I believe in terms of sheer talent and physical presence, they're just as good, if not better. And so people just haven't heard their names on a frequent basis, but I think they will in very short order this season, when you could surround that with, as you talked about, a very deep and experienced, talented running back room and four of your five starters back on the offensive line. You've got a pretty good foundation on offense.
as a runner, you know, like you said, he's not going to turn any heads, but at the same time, he moves well enough within the pocket. And I remember seeing him, in games against Coastal Carolina and Marshall last year, you know, making some big runs on, you know, third and long situations, you know, where you're facing a third and eight and him tucking it and picking up a first down.
Yeah, he can do that. He really can. And you don't really expect it. But, you know, the good thing about someone like Chase is sometimes what you don't want out of your quarterback who can run is they're sometimes too quick to go to that option. They'll go back, they'll go through maybe one or two reads, and then they'll take off and not necessarily take the amount of time that they need to let something develop. And Chase is never going to have that problem. As you mentioned, he moves around in the pocket really well to buy himself just a little bit of extra time. Could be a sidestep to the left or the right, just a little bit to get off his original spot, but give himself that extra half a second that he needs to let somebody get open. And that is, I think, a very underrated but much appreciated part of his game that makes him such an effective quarterback.
Shifting over to the defensive side of the ball, the defense obviously has been so great over the last several years. And I know Coach Jones, you know, with everything, and with, I know you had guys that were missing the game, you know, several defensive backs out and so forth in that bowl game. But I know they have a chance to really, really be special this year.
Yeah, you know, Dale Jones is an institution at App. This is his 26th season as a member of this coaching staff. You know, now he's the defensive coordinator, and the thing I think that may get overlooked with that defense that I'm excited about is that the entire defensive staff is back. At this level of college football, it's rare to go from one season to the next where your entire coaching staff is the same as it was the previous year. Now, we've already talked about on offense, you got a new coordinator and you got a new wide receivers coach. But on the defensive side of the ball, the entire defensive staff is back from last year. So the ability to build on that from last season, I think is important. There are some big shoes to fill on defense right in the middle with DeMarco Jackson, who was drafted by the Saints back in April. Sean Jolly, who was a former All-American cornerback. You're replacing two starting safeties. Although the guys who are replacing them have starting experience from last year, but you know, it's a next man up mentality for this defense. And then you're replacing two starters at defensive end as well. So the defense has a lot more experience to replace than the offense, but the defense is always built on depth and speed. And, you know, they've always been able to not to keep that same level of intensity and productivity, even when guys get hurt or have to miss a game. So I'm very interested to see how the defense performs this year, because we will see a lot of new faces have to make immediate impacts at one of those corner spots, at inside linebacker, at the defensive end positions. But in terms of guys to look out for, you know, Nick Hampton is really coming into his own as a premier pass rusher in college football. You know, he had 11 and a half sacks a year ago, which you know, he's the active leader in the Sun Belt in sacks for his career, second in tackles for loss amongst active Sun Belt players. You know, I think he's a guy that will get looks at the next level as an elite pass rusher. So he's the kind of guy that can be a big time difference maker on the defensive side. App needed that the last time it played North Carolina in 2019 with Demetrius Taylor, who single-handedly took over that game at defensive end. They might need something similar from Nick Hampton on Saturday.
Yeah, you talk about that matchup between the Mountaineer defense and then the Tar Heels offense, and you do have a new starter at quarterback, obviously Sam Howell moving on to the NFL and the Washington Commanders. But with Drake May, you know, he showed how he can hurt you with both his arms and his legs. Obviously not the same caliber of competition, but a very talented quarterback. And this is a really intriguing matchup.
It is. And I think the one thing that I learned more than anything from the game that they played against Florida A&M this past Saturday is that Drake May is legit. You know, he is well deserved for all the accolades that he received as a high school player, a five-star recruit. Committed to Alabama, flipped to North Carolina. He's legit. 6'4", 220 pounds, can make all the throws, can throw on the run, can throw out of the pocket. And then early in the game, he showed he's got wheels too. You know, he can bust a big run to really keep the defense honest. So he's absolutely going to be a problem, and someone that they're going to have to figure out how they can make him uncomfortable. And, you know, assuming Josh Downs is completely healthy on Saturday, you know, it helps that he's got a game-breaking type of receiver out there on his side of the ball too.
And for full disclosure for our viewers and listeners, I mean, this is being recorded on Wednesday, obviously airing on Thursday evening. But, you know, as we sit here on Wednesday, Adam, you know, just talk about, you know, some of the things that you view or that you've heard this coaching staff at App State and Sean Clark and company talk about as critical if the Apps are going to pick up a second consecutive victory over the Tar Heels on Saturday at noon.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing that Coach Clark and the staff are going to talk about is protecting the football. Somebody asked me in a previous interview this week, you know, what's the one thing that Chase Bryce needs to do to make sure that this offense does well? And I said, just protect the football. You know, don't throw it to the other team. Keep your hands on it. Make good decisions. Their goal is to end every possession with a kick. And if that's a punt, that's okay. That's better than a turnover. App got away with some games and in turning the ball over more than they wanted to. It speaks, I think, to the talent on this team and what they're capable of, that they lost the turnover battle in some games and still ended up winning 10 games that last year. But they turned the ball over too many times a year ago, and they've got to fix that. But that's the easiest way to let a game get away from you, is to give the offense a short field, give them extra opportunities, tax your defense, because you can't keep possession of the ball on offense. So for App to be successful, they've got to keep their defense fresh, and the offense has got to be able to not only possess the football, but be able to move, convert third downs, keep drives going, convert in the red zone. I mean, all the cliches that you talk about, but those are important. Those are the important stats they look at. How do we do on third down? How do we do in the turnover battle? How do we do in the red zone? Sometimes it's just as simple as that in terms of the stats that matter.
Yeah, I mean, I've always said, you know, cliches are cliches for a reason. You know, a lot of folks, you know, say, hey, I know this is cliche, but I mean, you know, they're obviously, like I said, cliches for a reason. But, you know, so taking a look at the matchup on the other side of the ball, we talked about the App State offense. You know, based on what you saw, I mean, Florida A&M did have some success, even though they ended up losing 56-24, especially in the first half. They really moved the football. So I know, you know, Coach Barbe and staff really probably saw some things that they could exploit. But at the same time, you wonder, given, you know, that matchup and knowing that they had the upper hand, how much Gene Chizik and staff may have held back going into this week.
Yeah, I mean, you never know. And it's first game as well. I mean, it's tough to be as sharp as you want to be, especially defensively, I think, in game one, because you just don't get a chance to have that kind of full speed contact in practice anymore before the season. And so there's some adjustment that comes with that. But I think the thing with North Carolina's defense is they are so big and talented up front. They've recruited really well in the trenches, particularly on defense. And also you bring in a UVA transfer and Noah Taylor along that defensive line. And so that if you've got a strong front like North Carolina does, it just helps your entire defense just because of the ability to get pressure and disrupt things with only three or four guys. And so that's the biggest thing that we look at in terms of, you know, how can we move the ball? How can App be successful against North Carolina's defense? It starts with being able to contain that really talented front. Now behind there, they've got some injury concerns. You know, their depth is waning, especially in the backfield. We don't know if Grimes is going to be healthy at one of those corner spots after getting hurt in the Florida A&M game. So for North Carolina, it starts with a really good front four. App's offensive line, which is talented and experienced in its own right, it's going to have to win a lot of those battles.
Most people, including Vegas, are expecting this to be a very close ball game. You know, it's been right around there from what I recall, you know, right around 2 to 3 points either way, pretty much since it opened.
if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, if this is in fact a four quarter game that comes down to the wire on Saturday afternoon, you know, tell us about the special teams and where that could really factor in, you know, punter kicker situation, as well as the return games for both squads.
Yeah. Return game is kind of, we'll wait and see at this point. There's a lot of different candidates that could factor in the return game for App. You know, Jalen Virgil was the kick returner who, for the last couple of years, returned three kicks for touchdowns in his career, just made the 53-man roster with the Broncos. And Thomas Hennigan, a four-year starter wide receiver, was their staple as punt returner. Both those guys have graduated, and so there's some new guys. You know, at the punt returning position, you've got somebody with some experience back there with Tyler Page. He's a transfer from SMU who was really productive as a punt returner, particularly during the 2020 season, when he was, I believe, top 20 in the country in punt returning. But it still remains to be seen how the rotation could work out for the return game. At kicker, you do lose a guy who had a record-setting season in Chandler Staton, missed one kick the entire year. He graduates. You bring in a very highly recruited kicker from West Virginia. His name is Michael Hughes. He's a redshirt freshman or sophomore, rather, because he handled kickoffs all last year. Now he takes on the place kicking duties. Huge leg. I mean, can knock it in from 50 plus, 55 plus even if he needs to. But he's the first to tell you that I can knock him in from 57 all I want, but if I miss from 40, it, you know, what does it matter? So he's very talented, shows great promise in the way he kicks in practice, but he's never been tested kicking field goals in a game. And will he get his opportunity on Saturday? I'm not sure. At punter, Clayton Howell is a new punter this year, but not new to the program. He actually was a freshman All-American his very first year, then got beat out for the job after that. So he's been the backup punter and the holder for the team. But now he gets his opportunity to be the punter this year. So they've got someone with some experience back there.
Couple more things for you, and circling back to the atmosphere that will be there at Kid Brewer Stadium on Saturday. You know, you've talked about the record crowd. I know the previous record was, you know, in the 37,000 range or so, or maybe you said it was upper 35s for that Wake Forest game that the Apps lost in heartbreaking fashion several years ago. But you know, if you would just talk about the atmosphere, you know, from the standpoint of the bleachers in the north end zone that have been installed.
Yeah. So the previous record was a little over 35,000 for the Wake Forest game, just beating out by about 500 people the game that where App hosted Miami, a ranked Miami team in 2016. So what App has done is, you know, there were already some additional seats put in last year in the north end zone, because of the new facility has some premium seating right outside their banquet area up on the third and fourth floor. Below that, on field level, behind that north end zone, in previous games, they've had kind of an open garden area. They call it the Rock Garden. It's, you know, you can hang out, you can have drinks, you can have some food and just hang out, standing room only area to just hang out and watch the game from that perspective. But what they've done for this game is they've taken that area where they had the garden, and they've brought in a little over 2,000 seats through temporary bleachers, and they've installed it right beneath the overhang where the premium seats are. So it kind of cascades down pretty well and fits in really nicely with the contours of that building. So you've added over 2,000 additional seats to the capacity. So you've probably got about 3,000 seats in the north end zone, added on to the already capacity of 30,000 seats. So between that and general admission, which will be located in the south end zone grass area, the hill, and some other little pockets of the stadium, we're thinking that there's going to be, I'm thinking between 38 and 39,000 is what we get to. I thought maybe could it get to 40. I just don't think there's just not enough space for 40,000, but it's going to, without question, be a record crowd, but I'm guessing somewhere in the neighborhood of between 38 and 39,000.
And lastly, you know, moving on after this game, what is a very challenging season opener, the Apps go to College Station to
to battle the Texas A&M Aggies, who have such lofty expectations, of course, under Jimbo Fisher. So talk about what lies ahead in the non-conference, and then also the SBC, the Sun Belt Conference, is just continues to steadily improve.
Yeah, it is a challenging schedule, to say the least. And you mentioned the start of it for non-conference. You've got this game Saturday against North Carolina, and then the trip to College Station against what will be a top 10 Texas A&M team, who's fresh off having the number one recruiting class in the country. So very tough start to September. Then you got to jump right into conference play after that against Troy. And the East Division gets better and better every year when you bring in a school like Marshall, another highly regarded team at the Group of Five level. And not only that, but in November, toward the end of the year, App plays most of its important games on the road. So they're going to play Marshall, Coastal Carolina, and their biggest rival, Georgia Southern, all on the road, all in the month of November. So it starts off difficult. It ends just as difficult with all those road games and conference play against the other contenders in the East Division. This is as challenging of a schedule as App has ever had. And so, you know, they won 10 games last year, and I've said over and over, App could be a better team than it was last year. The record may not indicate it, just because the schedule is that much more challenging.
No doubt. That's something I noticed as well, you know, scanning the schedule when it came out, you know, months back. But going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. And, you know, as far as the Sun Belt Conference is concerned, I love what they did. You know, you always hear things come full circle, you know, in all areas of life. And I'm hoping that that'll be the case with conferences and the way they're aligned and so forth. But with the Sun Belt Conference and, you know, $2 million to many leagues, that doesn't seem like much, you know, to a P5 league, obviously. But then, you know, outside of the American, which is right around $7 million, that is a lot of money, and it's a huge step up from where things have been previously. And it's going to be interesting to see with the league steadily improving where it goes in the future.
Yeah, it is. And I will say that through all of this, the Sun Belt is very confident and it's comfortable in its own skin. I love the way the league is shaped, because I think it maximizes the things that we love about college football. You know, you and I are talking right now because there's a really intriguing matchup and a really fun matchup for the fan bases with App and North Carolina playing. You could say the same about ECU playing NC State this weekend. Those games matter. They're fun. They're what college football is all about. It's a lot more interesting for y'all to talk about East Carolina football and for me to talk about App State football playing these games versus NC State playing North Texas or Bowling Green or someone like that. It just doesn't move the meter, but the Sun Belt has capitalized on some of that stuff. So with that, being able to play schools like Marshall and Coastal Carolina and Georgia Southern and JMU, those games move the meter and really make college football a lot more fun for the fans.
Yeah, very exciting news. You bring up NC State, that home and home with the Wolfpack and the Mountaineers. So, you know, just to clarify, you know, what years is that? And I know the first matchup is going to be in Boone.
Yeah, so that report that came out the other day, there's nothing official released by the schools yet, but the report that came out is App and NC State playing in 25 and in Boone, and then returning the game in Raleigh in 26.
Appreciate that information, and as always, appreciate the visit. Tell folks how they can listen to your broadcast if they're unable to watch on TV, or while they're watching on TV if they want to pair the two up, and then also how they can follow you on social media.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So they can find our network of radio affiliates on our website, appstatesports.com, our flagship station for anybody in the western part of the state. Certainly within an hour or two of Boone, can listen on our flagship 97.3 FM. If you're not within range of one of our radio affiliates, you can download the free Varsity Network app. That's through Learfield. It's free. You can listen to App State and any other school with Learfield on that app. Crystal clear audio. You can listen to a stream on appstatesports.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Adam B. Witten.
Will certainly be an unbelievable sight at Kid Brewer on Saturday afternoon. And, here's hoping the Mountaineers take care of business and are victorious. But as always, appreciate the time, Adam. We'll have you back throughout the 2022 season.
You got it, man. Anytime.
That is the play-by-play voice of the App State Mountaineers, Adam Witten. As always, appreciate his time. Also appreciate Ryan Wallen of Al's Daily, Temple 24/7 sports site, joining us to preview that matchup in the beginning of the Stan Drayton era as they will travel to Durham on Friday night to take on the Duke Blue Devils in the beginning of the Mike Elko era. And then also to kick off the show, appreciate Palmer Toms of Dogs HQ spending a half hour with us talking Georgia football and specifically that game this weekend against number 11 Oregon is taking place in Atlanta. But as always, we appreciate everyone tuning in. We'll be with you next week on the Inside Slant again next Thursday night, right around 8 p.m. And in addition to this program, so much other content headed your way. Like we mentioned earlier, we have A Pirate's Life for Me coming your way on Friday at noon. I caught up with John Cazaza, the first East Carolina quarterback to lead the Pirates to a win over NC State back in 1971 when the Pirates were 31-15 victors over the Wolfpack at Carter-Finley Stadium. And then also on Saturday, we'll have the Pulse of Pirate Nation. I'll be catching up with former East Carolina wide receiver Lamont Chapel for a brief conversation about Saturday's game, as well as his memories of that first trip NC State made to Greenville back in 1999 when the Pirates were victorious, with David Garrard having a big day on the ground and East Carolina winning 23-6 over Mike O'Kane and the Wolfpack. And then on Sunday, we'll have the Pirate football playback as we'll take a look at East Carolina's season opener against number 13, NC State. But for the entire Sports Objective team, Dave Richmond, Kyle Barber, Matt Semenza, I'm Bubba Rosenbaum. You've been watching and listening to the Inside Slant on the Sports Objective. Have a great weekend, everyone. And as always, go Pirates.